Welcome back to the Noise Cancelling Podcast, the only podcast on the internet that gathers three of the greatest tech journalists from all corners of the interwebs to chat about the last 7 days in tech, reminisce about the industry in general, and just chat a load of nonsense, basically. If you enjoy that, you can find us on YouTube and all sorts of podcast services like Spotify, Google Podcasts, iTunes. Wherever you're listening, please do consider subscribing, giving us a good rating. We very much appreciate you for that. Without further ado, let's find out who we've got on the podcast this week, kicking off with Cherie.
Hey, I'm Cherie L. Smith, editor-in-chief of Laptop Mag.
Hi, I'm John McCann, global managing editor of Tech Radar, smooth as ever.
And Mark.
My name is Mark Spoonauer. I'm the global editor-in-chief for Tom's Guide.
And I am not Gareth Beavis, unfortunately. He is away today and I will be taking the spot. My name is Matt Phillips. I am Tech Radar's video producer. And we will begin the podcast this week, as we always begin the podcast, with a big question. But first, a little bit of context. VW, Volkswagen, changed their name. Mark, I know you've been following this one. What is going on with this?
Okay, so here's what happened. So Volkswagen was trying to drum up a lot of publicity for the fact that they are getting into electric vehicles, granted, much longer after everyone else. And the first news was that the ID. Buzz, which is a concept minibus that was electric, is coming to life, that it actually is coming out within the next year or so. I think it's on tap for 2023. But as part of that news, they something leaked earlier this week, and it turned out it was a fake leak of a press release that Volkswagen of America was changing its name to Volkswagen with a T. And so lots of sites started covering it, including us, but also NPR, CNN, CNBC. And so a lot of people thought it was legit, despite the fact that some sites said that this is likely to be an April Fool's joke. So after everyone thought it was real for about a day, Volkswagen then came out last night saying, oh no, actually we were joking. And I don't think a lot of people were laughing because, Volkswagen doesn't have the best, they don't have the best reputation when it comes to telling the truth, especially around their diesel vehicles in the past. So it really just, for a lot of people, just became part of that pattern as opposed to just being a prank.
Yeah, a bit of a ridiculous one, right? Obviously coming out, like you say, leaking a little bit before April, so ruining the joke already, but then not even committing through to April 1st. At least commit through another day and say, actually, it was an April Fool's joke. But an interesting one. But it got us all chatting about the tech, gaming, and entertainment world loving a good April Fool's joke. So we wanted to reminisce a little bit and look back and discuss which April Fool's jokes that have happened do we wish had become a reality, or just which are our favorite April Fool's jokes that we've seen. And Cherie, I know you've got one loaded in the gun ready to go, so tell us about your one.
I have two, and they're both from the same company, because no one does April Fool's like Razer. The first that I really wish did, but a couple of these have actually become actual products, because remember when we were all laughing about Razer's energy drink, and then lo and behold, Energy's Razer drink became a thing. But the two that I am thinking of is the Endelon, the first wearable drone. Like, you basically had this power glove set up and you would be controlling the drone. I still want that. I think that would be incredibly cool. I would absolutely buy that if they made that. And the toaster. Like, the toaster was actually plausible, because by that point, they were sending people RGB water thermoses that would light up, like, depending on, like, you could use it with Synapse. You could set it to light up when you need to remind you to take a drink. So once they started doing that, the toaster seemed kind of plausible. And I wouldn't say no to an RGB toaster. I would not. It changes colors as the heat intensifies, and when you start getting to your desired setting, it starts flashing or doing something. I would have gone for that.
I love that Razer is branching out as well. Like, at CES, they announced the Project Hazel face mask, right? And it looks like maybe that's actually going to become reality as well. And so, yeah, absolutely. Diversify. Put RGB in everything and sell it to me. I'll buy it.
Yes.
I'm there with you.
Don't forget, they also have their reusable drinking straw. Yours for just 25 euros.
That one missed me, I'll be honest with you. But John, what is your favorite April Fool's joke, or which one did you wish had come true?
Well, let me take you back to 2013. And
oh, I'm there. I'm
a
ready.
Press release from Virgin Atlantic Airways with a brand new plane announcement. It's the glass-bottomed plane. You may have seen or been on a glass-bottomed boat, but a glass-bottomed plane. So you walk down the aisle and you just see the ground beneath you, be that 30,000 feet in the sky. I would personally love that. You know, planes have started putting little cameras on the underside of their belly, so you can pick if you want a view out of the front, like a cockpit view or a belly bird's eye view. And I've flown a few aircraft of these now. I love it. So having the whole floor as glass, I mean, I am down for that. But unfortunately, it wasn't real.
I think plane companies are already finding it hard enough to get people who are afraid of flying onto planes as it is. That is not going to help the situation, right?
All you need is one person who's throwing a temper tantrum for wearing a mask, and then the whole floor cracks.
Shatters. All right, good stuff. Mark, we're coming to you then.
Well, let's go back to the same year, 2013. So there was a British shop called Firebox that said that they had a real life Iron Man suit available for sale. And why the hell not? So they did say at the time that it didn't come with weapons. Those weren't fully operational. So it was definitely plausible, right? But they did say that you would be able to fly. But I think the tip off was that, like, basically you were not covered, you know, should you be injured by your arch nemesis.
Yeah, it's always the wording in that last paragraph that gives these things away, isn't it?
Yeah, it's $250,000. I would say that's probably too low a price also.
Definitely.
I would pay much, much more.
Well, something that I was interested in seeing come to life and surely would have been a lot cheaper than that was the HTC Glove beta that they announced back in 2014. This basically looks like an oven mitt, something you would use to get your hot trays out of the oven with a HTC phone strapped to it. But this was like ever so slightly before like Apple Watches and sort of wearables were really in the limelight. And yeah, me and Cherie clearly on the same wavelength of just loving a techie glove. And I'm all for it. Whatever happened to the techie glove, huh? The power glove? Where did they go? Where did they go, eh? But would you have ever seriously used something like this, the HTC glove? Or is this just complete nonsense?
It's just an early smartwatch, right? They're like, how do we get a smartphone on your hand wrist area? So no, but I will happily wear a smartwatch.
Well, if Gareth was here and giving out the points, I'm sure I would have won because he loves a good HTC bring up. He loves HTC, and if they were still around, I'm sure eventually they would have come out with a smartwatch and maybe it would have looked as terrible as this thing does. Maybe. Brilliant stuff. All right, then moving on then to my favorite segment of the show. What has become my favorite segment of the show, the Gadget Hall of Fame. We're of course building our little fake virtual Gadget Museum, and we want new guests to bring along something to put in the museum. Mark, obviously, you are our newest guest on the show this week, and so we would love to hear what you have brought along to the museum.
Okay, well, let's go on our Wayback Machine to 2010, and do you want to guess even by the year what it was?
2010.
It was a big phone launch that was actually kind of small.
iPhone 4.
And it introduced us to the card-based interface for multitasking.
Was that the iPhone 4?
It was the Palm Pre.
Oh, the Palm.
The Palm Pre.
My baby, I loved that phone.
And WebOS, at the time, was somewhat revolutionary, I think, because it really got the industry thinking about or rethinking what a smartphone could be in terms of the user interface especially. But it also introduced some other ideas. But like, let's start with the interface. So the card-based interface that a lot of people are used to today, that was introduced with the iPhone X, came out with this phone. Granted, you know, it was tweaked, and you can argue that the iPhone does it better now. But it introduced people to the idea of this new way of multitasking. And I think that Palm did a really good job with it, and it was very slick, especially for the time. It was also the first to have those slide-in notifications that a lot of us are now used to on phones. And it was also the first phone to introduce what then became universal search. So you would just type in this box, and it was actually called just type. And you would use the slide-up keyboard, which was cute, you know, those gummy keys at the time, and just search what you're looking for. And then, so on top of all of that, it was the first phone with wireless charging, I believe, and it was magnetic. So in a way, it was a precursor to the MagSafe on the iPhone 12. So with like when you add up all of these different innovations in this one little phone, you could make the case that the Palm Pre very much deserves a spot in the Gadget Hall of Fame.
I think you've made a fantastic case for it. John, what is your experience with the Palm Pre? Do you think it deserves to end up in the museum?
Absolutely. Well earned. A bit of an iconic handset. I mean, it had terrible battery life. I was working in a pub around the time that came out, and one of the customers had it and they were so chuffed with it. But they'd bought the expanded battery pack, which tripled, if not quadrupled, the thickness of the phone. So it was kind of ridiculous because I was there with my iPhone 3GS and they were like, oh, well, you can't even Bluetooth a file to another phone. Who remembers Bluetoothing files to phones? Like, oh my goodness, we've come so far. But they were like, oh, you know, your iPhone's rubbish. I was like, yeah, but your phone's like three times the thickness of mine. That's crazy. But I love the slider, the gentle curve of it, the sort of a rollable controller. It was a beautiful phone.
And Cherie, finally, do you think we deserve to head back into this sort of design realm? Can we see BlackBerry coming out with a new phone? Do you want a keyboard on your phone? Do you want that tactile feedback?
Well, number one, I was a huge Palm fan before I switched over to Android, and the Palm Pre was, I loved that phone so much. It was my favorite of the Palm phones, and it was the last phone I had before I had to switch over to Android. And the only reason I switched over is because I inadvertently left my phone somewhere and like it got stolen. And when I went to Sprint, because Sprint was still a thing, they had no more Palm Pres. They had the HTC Evo 4G, and that was my first intro to Android phones, and I haven't looked back since. Whoever bought the BlackBerry licensee, aren't they working on rolling out a new one this year or next?
There were rumors of it, right? But I don't think it ever officially became a real announcement. Am I right in thinking that?
I feel like it's changed hands a couple different times, but I think, sure, you're right. I think they are working on some new handsets in the background. In this particular case, I think the keyboard was not a key selling point, and I think there were other weaknesses as well. Like, it was a little bit slow. The battery life was definitely bad. But I think overall, it sort of paved the way for how, like, we rethought phone interfaces, which I think is definitely a plus.
And as far as physical keyboards coming back, yeah, I can see physical, because foldables are becoming a thing. And we'll just, and then somebody will be like, look, a physical keyboard. And we're all going to be like, wow, that's so novel. Yeah, they'll come back.
So Texas company Onward Mobile is the latest firm to pick up the BlackBerry mobile license after TCL ditched it at the start of 2020. Onward Mobility picked it up towards the end of 2020. And they say they're going to launch a 5G BlackBerry phone in 2021, but we've not really heard anything since, so we will see.
We will see indeed. Mark, I've just Googled it and found your review of the Palm Pre from 2009. A breakthrough device is the first phone that truly gives the iPhone a run for its money. Where are we at now? Where do we feel like we're at now? Do we have plenty of phones that are really giving iPhone a run for its money, or do we still feel like iPhone is really ahead of the game, and what features can we bring from the 2009 Palm Pre over to new devices?
I feel like, unfortunately, we're now, and I'd love to hear from you guys, like, I feel like we're now in a spot where the phone market is a duopoly. You know, we have Samsung, and then we have the iPhone. The good news with Samsung is that there's a lot of variety within their lineup, you know, between foldables and what they're trying to do there. And there's a lot of value-based devices. But the fact that you have LG contemplating exiting the market, HTC is basically no more. Motorola has now been mostly relegated to budget phones. The only bright spot in the last, you know, few months has been the OnePlus 9, which I know we're going to be getting into. But I think overall, it's not good for consumers in terms of just having this lack of choice. So basically, I think for most people, it's like iPhone or Samsung. And there's not, and even, you know, Huawei, as you guys know, because they've lost access to the Google Play Store, they've become largely irrelevant, which is a shame because they were really making good hardware up until about a year ago. So, but what do you guys think?
I'm not going to discount Google just yet. I am sad about LG. I hope LG finds a way to hold on, because LG just has this throw caution to the wind type of approach when it comes to phone design, and it's greatly needed. Like, oh, we're getting into foldables? No, we're not going to give you a folding hinge on a phone that could possibly break. We're just going to give you two screens, like you're going to slide it in, and when you want a bigger screen, you got it. When you don't, you got a regular phone. I love that concept. I love what they were doing with rollables, and without that, you need someone there to push the envelope, and LG was doing that in a fun, quirky fashion. Google like is there to push cameras, to keep stepping on iPhone's neck in terms of camera. Samsung, I'm just gonna stay Samsung, and I miss HTC. I miss beautiful metallic phones in bright, vibrant colors.
LG are the wild card and have been for years in the smartphone pack. They stuck the power button on the back of the phone and declared now everything is possible. Like, we were held back with that side-loaded power button, but no, they put it to the back and then everything was possible. And that changed my life. And then the next year they were like, actually, we've got an even better idea. You see this piece of cow skin? Slap that back onto the back of the phone. Boof. Leather-backed phone, which had a gentle curvature to it, so it sat nicely against your face. Oh, you know, they had all the ideas. They were the first to bring a QHD display to a smartphone. So they were also a pioneer in new tech as well. But yeah, always something interesting from LG. It had some amazing times at MWC. They had the LG rolling bot, which came with sort of very anime-like rabbit ears that you could stick on, and it would roll around your home and play with your pet because it had like a laser pointer. They were always good value.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, it's probably wishful thinking on my part, but I feel like we're in this new zone of smartphones, right? Where will it be rollable? Will it be foldable? Will it be none of the above? I don't know. But there is an interesting gap here for somebody new potentially to sneak in, or like you say, LG, or, you know, even Sony potentially, I could see making a real break for it. You know, the Xperia phones have always been well received by those who pick them up. But not many people pick them up for whatever reason that is. I'm not sure. But yeah, like, it could be really interesting to see where we are in 5 years' time, I think. And with that, let's move on then to the news. And the last 7 days in tech have been a busy one. Speaking of Sony, oh, I had a great segue there lined up and I totally missed it. I totally blanked on it. Our first news story this week is Sony closing down the PlayStation 3, the PSP, and the PS Vita shops. Sheree, I know you've been keeping an eye on this one, and I'm assuming it upsets you. It upsets me as a Vita owner.
It's so hard to say goodbye to yesterday.
Copyright strikes all over the place now. Thanks for that one.
It's 10 seconds. No.
Okay.
But anyway, the kid in me weep for this, and the adult in me weep for this. Cadults all over. It's the true end of an era, and I never thought that would happen. Like, I thought, no, actually, when I think about it, because Sony had it out for the Vita when it announced the Vita. I don't know why I hated the Vita. Why? Like, it was I still maintain,
I love the Vita so much. It's so good.
So do I. I still maintain the Vita was well ahead of its time. It just did not get the proper support. And Sony just was like, it just had it out for its own product the minute that it launched. Like, hey, not only is it going to be crazy expensive, we're going to charge you at least $200 to expand the memory. And you're going to need to expand the memory because the games are all massive. It's just like, what? Why would you do this? So I could see the writing on the wall for the PSP and the Vita stores. I did not think that they were going to close the PS3 store. That was the shocker for me. But I guess with Sony embracing backwards compatibility more and more, it kind of makes sense. It's like, well, if we let you keep that PS3, and we, like, you're not going to invest in these remasters and re-releases and what have you, and like, or this shiny new console that you can barely get your hands on, but everyone is writing about our restocks. Like, so we need to make sure that you have no choice but to join this rat race to get this highly sought after console. So I think it's a bit nefarious. It's definitely a whole lot of sad. And it really marks the end to an era because I had so much fun on my PS3, my PSP, and of course my Vita.
I think the important thing to note here is they all still work, right? You just can't go to the store and buy new games on those devices. And so, yeah, it is a sad time, certainly. There are some incredible games on those shops that seemingly will be lost to new people, unfortunately. Stuff like Freedom Wars on the PS Vita is incredible. If you have a Vita and it's gathering dust in a drawer somewhere, go get it, go buy Freedom Wars and play that game because it's amazing. But yeah, like, it certainly is a sad time. And like you say, with the sort of launch of the PS5 and stuff, the store looks very different. It feels very different. I wonder how much of this is them trying to untangle the mess of the PlayStation Network. You know, it's only very recently you've been able to change your PlayStation name on the PlayStation. Like, that is crazy, a feature that Xbox have had since day one, and PlayStation seemingly had this back-end mess that they had to untangle to get to this point. Mark, how important do you think this is? Do you think this is a minority of people who really care about this and it's kind of not worth it, or do you think this is kind of bad news writing on the wall?
You know, we were talking about it in our chat room this week, and there was one person on staff, Mike, who said that I still have my PS3 and I use it whenever I want to watch Blu-rays. And then it goes back into the closet. So I think at some point, like, given the fact that I think it's 2006 that the PS3 came out, I think Sony has to have the right at some point to say, we cannot devote resources to a console that is this old. And I think, you know, more and more is moving to the cloud. I mean, it's a little bit unfortunate for those who maybe can't afford to upgrade to a new console, but hopefully, you know, with the PS4, maybe that'll be coming down in price once the PS5 is more readily available. That's the one thing that we really haven't seen yet. You know, when is that price drop going to come on the regular PS4? Maybe it won't happen until there's more PS5s in the market.
It also makes you consider whether or not buying an all digital console is the right way to go. Will it be limited in the future if it's deemed no longer viable to continue running in whatever capacity? And if we shift to cloud gaming and cloud stores and you have an all-digital console, you know, do you lose everything? It's very difficult to say. And that decision is, well, I mean, it's, what, 14, 15 years since the PS3 launch? So we're a long way off, you know, a PS5 or an Xbox all digital edition potentially running into this issue, you just don't know at the minute. So, you know, buying that physical copy of the game at least means that you'll still be able to play it on your console in 20 years time.
That's a good point. No forced obsolescence.
Yes.
Also, Matt, you said something interesting. You've been in the PS5 store. Why? What is there to buy?
I've been in there to download the free games that they keep offering me, like Ratchet & Clank and Destruction All-Stars.
Oh, okay. I just wanted, because, like...
Yeah, no, I get you. I get
in
you.
In May, I will be doing a 6-month report card for both of these systems, and without games, neither will fare well.
That's fair enough. That's fair. You know, I think the one that was really heartbreaking for me was Kena, Bridge of Spirits, which is, I mean, it looks like a Pixar movie, Disney movie come to life in a video game. It looks incredible, and I was so excited for that when it was supposed to come out at the beginning of the month in March, and has now been pushed to August. And so if you're doing that review in May, then you still won't even have that, which is upsetting.
So I was just curious as to what activities were going on in there.
I'm looking at all the cards that offer me pre-orders for stuff and just hoping there aren't more delays for things, but I'm sure there will be. But where we can expect to see more announcements that hopefully won't get delayed, that was a terrible segue, but I'm going to roll with it. Apple's WWDC 2021 was announced. It's happening June 7th to June 11th. Mark, I want to come to you on this one. What are we hoping to see at WWDC?
I can tell you what lots of fanboys and girls are already hoping to see based on what's been happening on Twitter over the last day or so. So a lot of the invite images have people wearing glasses in them. And because of that, you have people speculating that Apple is going to tease the Apple Glass at WWDC. I think that is highly unlikely. For a couple of different reasons. One, we've all learned at this point that Apple will likely launch a headset first, a VR mixed reality headset, way before the Apple Glass. So I feel like it's way premature. And if you actually look at the GIF of the woman in the glasses, the apps that are supposedly on the inside of her lens only appear once she flips open the MacBook. So I really feel like this is highly, highly wishful thinking on the part of people who want to see an Apple Glass before it's ready for prime time. But regardless, maybe that's also because WWDC is not known for hardware. We're going to see iOS 15. We're going to see the next version of macOS and iPadOS. And they're just not as exciting as shiny new gadgets.
Yeah, I think at this point, Apple has so many rumored devices in the works, right? Like, if we see a tease for Apple Glass ahead of a tease for, like, an official tease for Apple AirTags or whatever they're going to end up calling those trackers, I would eat my shoe. Like, I can't believe that they still aren't a thing and they're not out. Like, we've heard rumors and rumors and rumors about these things. Surely they can't be that difficult to get right. I don't know. Clearly, I don't know enough about these things, but
we're still waiting for that charging pad, right?
Oh, the air power.
Didn't they officially come out and say we're not doing that? Didn't they like have to announce an official thing of being like no?
Yeah. So I mean, you know, meanwhile, Xiaomi is like here you are, fit world. So I mean, you know, it might be extremely difficult. They can't Columbus it, so it's like, oh well, all right. So who knows?
Who knows? John, what are you hoping to see? Anything exciting? Do you think we can get a glimpse at any of these incredible new generational products, or is it all going to be boring iOS stuff?
Oh, I'm always a sucker for a major software update. So for me, iOS and iPadOS, how will it change my iPad? What new tricks is it going to bring to it? Is there going to be speed improvements? I love those sort of, you know what I like? I love a change log. Whenever a little app update is available, straight into the store, I'm expanding the box, I'm seeing what they've added. Whenever it says information not provided by developer, oh, I want to throw my phone through the wall. I love a change log. I love seeing what's updated. Give me a new UI. Give me some new
features. I'm not sure if you're joking or not.
No, I'm 100% serious. I love updates.
It's always difficult to tell when a Brit's being sarcastic or not. I can vouch he is not being sarcastic. This is okay. Legit. He is super excited.
I was going along for the ride and I'm like, okay.
I'm like, oh, all right. Like,
I'm just a simple person with simple pleasures. And if you give me a nice app update, I'm happy. So yeah, what always surprises me is how far back Apple goes with its support. So it'd be interesting to see if any devices drop off the supported list, you know, looking at maybe is it iPhone 6 or 6S that was still supported with the last iOS update. So it'd be interesting to see if Apple keeps that support. It goes much further back than any Android manufacturer with its new releases. So those with really old iPhones, 6s, 6Xs, they may not get the next one, but it'll be interesting to see where they land there, because as you add more features and provide more demanding on the CPU and the GPU features, then it is going to be a struggle for older devices. Is it going to make those ones actually slow down? Is it going to make them worse? That's always worth keeping an eye on. Two, we have seen bits of hardware in the past. I think HomePod was first teased at WWDC. Well, RIP that, but you know, it is rumored to maybe doing a smart display, but who knows?
Who knows indeed? And Sri, I want to come to you last then. Obviously, hopefully, we're going to see some Mac OS 12 stuff here. What are you hoping to see from the Mac OS side?
At this point, like, anything that improves performance is always going to be a big thing for me. I want to see expansion on the Rosetta side for the M1 chips, or at least more native apps. So we can just go full speed ahead into the M1 era. Now that I've had a taste, I do not want to go back.
I think everybody's used them and saying the same stuff, right? Everybody who's used those M1 chips is incredibly impressed.
Like, am I ready to totally give up Intel or AMD? No, but as far as when I am using a Mac, this is the only way that I want to use a Mac.
Well, that's an impressive start to their M1 chip legacy. We'll see what updates we get at WWDC. But something we won't probably hear about, almost definitely won't hear about at WWDC, is the iPhone 13. But we have had a load of new rumors, potential leaks dropping. Mark, what's going on with iPhone 13?
A lot. It's actually kind of surprising, you know, what we're learning this many months out. I would say that the volume of leaks is even more this time around earlier on than the iPhone 12.
Does that just make them less reliable?
I'm not sure because, well, I think we have heard within the last week that Apple is apparently cracking down more on leaks, especially when it comes to their suppliers. And I think they, you know, I don't know what they're doing. Maybe they're sending assassins. We'll have to see. but I think, you know, what we've heard in the last couple of weeks is at least encouraging. Like, we've all heard already that Apple is finally going to be embracing 120 hertz displays, which is long overdue, but hopefully they'll do it in a power efficient way. But I don't know whether or not it's going to be just for the pros, which I think it will, especially if they wind up calling it ProMotion. Some of the more recent rumors, you know, touch on things like colors. There apparently may be an orange model, and there's some mock-ups out there which actually look kind of cool. I haven't seen many orange phones, so that would be a nice change of pace. And then there's also a lot of rumors around a smaller notch. So Android phones are just sort of like looking at Apple saying, like, what is the big deal? Why is this still around? But as you guys know, it's really hard to shrink down all of that true depth technology on the front of the iPhone. And Face ID works pretty well. The question is, you know, how much can they shrink the notch? Because it is a little bit of an eyesore, especially when you're watching video or if you're on an app that has like a white background where the notch really sticks out. So I think the notch is going to get smaller, but it's not going away. And there's also rumors that there's going to be Touch ID built into the screen. And even though we're making a lot of progress around vaccines around the world, I think that for the foreseeable future, we'll be wearing masks in public, at least, you know, a decent portion of the time. So I think it would be nice to have Touch ID as a backup for Face ID. So there's lots of little rumors, and obviously camera upgrades are going to be a part of the process. And we're hearing just today that the iPhone 13 Pro Max will be much better in low light, likely due to a larger sensor. But you know, there's a lot of competition around cameras in particular, and a very subjective thing. Right now, the iPhone 12 is still at the top of our camera phone list, but the OnePlus 9 Pro in particular with the Hasselblad has done well. So is the S21 Ultra, and so has the Pixel 5. So there's lots of great choices if you want a good camera.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of what you talked about there is small incremental upgrades, right? Perhaps the most ambitious upgrade, if you like, is the 120 hertz refresh rate screen. But as we know, that is already in a ton of smartphones. That's an ambitious upgrade for Apple. That's a big jump for Apple to make, but not certainly in the wider smartphone scape. John, I'm curious, what is the one big feature that you think needs to hit this iPhone 13 that would actually be exciting for people?
So it may not be the most exciting thing necessarily, but I think the one thing that would get maybe the most attention would be if Apple ditched the notch. It's quite a simple maybe subtraction to the sort of average Joe eye, perhaps. But Apple doesn't change the design of its handsets all that often. The first three iPhones were pretty much the same. Then you had iPhone 4 through 5S. Okay, it grew a little bit taller, but still very much flat sides, rectangular shape. Then you had 6 through 8-ish. And then we've had iPhone 10 onwards have all sort of been similar with that notch display. So if it was to drop the notch, that would actually be quite a big step forward for Apple because it doesn't reinvent its design wheel that often. Outside of that, I, you know what? I'm just bored of smartphone cameras now. Every manufacturer says they've got the best, next, greatest snapper. My goodness. Smartphones have become so boring because they're so focused on photography. Every phone at a high end is going to give you a good picture. Let's find something new and exciting. Give me some rollables and some scrollables and some foldables and some, I don't know, edibles, anything.
I love that so much. And Cherie, obviously, we all know here that you are diehard. You didn't give me that face. As soon as I come to you talking about iPhones, you give me the face. Not everybody can see the face because it's an audio-only podcast, but I know the face. They know the face. You obviously diehard Samsung. What is the one thing that they could bring over to the iPhone that might actually get you considering hitting that order button, putting the iPhone 13 in your shopping cart?
Nothing.
Moving on.
I already knew the answer.
I have an iPhone for testing purposes, and I do use it. I'm using it for Clubhouse right now because that's the only way I can get on Clubhouse, but nothing like anything iPhone could do, Samsung can and does do better. So there it is.
What if they come out with a foldable, rollable iPhone 13? Would that get you intrigued even a little bit?
Well, you know how I feel about foldables. Like, until we get, like, why I am always happy to see them, because they are pushing innovation and development of new ideas. I personally am not looking for, I don't think I'm going to be buying a foldable until maybe 2 years, 3 years out, when like all the fixability thing issues and breakability issues are really, really addressed.
Fair enough. Well, moving on then from the iPhone 13 to the OnePlus 9 phones. Obviously, these have been out in the wild now for a little while. Lots of reviews out and about. People enjoying these phones, certainly. But Mark, I know you guys have been looking over on Tom's Guide about looking at this phone compared to its biggest competitors. How does it hold up in real-world testing, in your experience?
You know, surprisingly well. I mean, we did an in-depth face-off between the OnePlus 9 Pro and the Galaxy S21 Ultra. And just on value alone, even before you start looking at the two phones, OnePlus has an advantage. It starts at $969. So granted, it is a premium phone, especially for OnePlus. But for the Galaxy S21 Ultra, you're starting at $1,200. So you already have an advantage there for OnePlus. And we've also saw, you know, about the same battery life. You get much faster charging with the OnePlus 9 Pro. And the camera actually held its own, the Hasselblad camera. It gives you more natural colors versus Samsung. And again, a lot of it is subjective. Like, some actually prefer the more like saturated hues that you get from the S21 Ultra and all Samsung phones. They just have a tendency to do that. But right on down the line, from the display, which is actually even more dynamic, it goes down to 1 hertz as opposed to 10 hertz for the S21 Ultra. It was a very close contest, but the OnePlus 9 Pro came out by a single point, which I think is a huge deal if you're sort of on the fence between those two and you're open to the idea of owning a brand other than Samsung if you're in the market for an Android device. So I think OnePlus deserves a lot of credit, because the OnePlus 8T was actually a step backwards for the brand. And as you guys have probably seen, there's been a sort of an exodus in terms of talent, especially at the higher levels in terms of executives, which has raised a lot of questions around what's going around like with OnePlus. But I think that this has been a really good comeback phone for them.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the OnePlus has always been one of those really interested brands that's super community focused. It's always been the little guy fighting the giants that is Apple. John, I'm curious to get your thoughts on this. Is the OnePlus 9 living up to the expectations of what it had to be? Obviously, they've had to increase the price. OnePlus has always been that brand that's kept all the good specs in for that lower price point. Do you think they're really up there competing with big boys now?
They're absolutely trying to, and whether that's the right step for the particular brand remains to be seen. When people have that much money, they have choices with, you know, Apple, Samsung, other established, more established brands. Not that OnePlus isn't established anymore, but there are more established brands than it available. So it does position the brand at a different audience than it sort of maybe original fan base, which were all about sticking it to the big names and undercutting them quite significantly in price. So it's an interesting flex, but it's not like OnePlus has just gone into 2021 and gone, oh, look, we're upping the price. It's been doing it gradually over the years. This is no surprise it's gone this way. And it's realized that actually, while it was one of the first onto the scene to be, as itself sort of named, flagship killers, there's a whole bunch of other companies doing exactly the same thing. You've got Xiaomi, Vivo, Oppo, Meizu, to name but a few, Honor, Huawei to an extent, all offering decent specs at a very affordable and competitive price. So it needs to be able to do something to either stand out in that particular affordability crowd or take the next step onto that premium tier, because there are some of its fans who were after a premium spec phone. So it's now trying to please those who want the premium tier, and it has Nord, which is now its more affordable range. But the messaging around Nord was weird, because they were saying it's everything you need in a phone, which then sort of makes you think, well, why do you offer these top-end devices then if you're saying that Nord is all you need? So it's in an interesting position right now, the brand, and the next 18 months I think will be telling.
Absolutely, absolutely. I've just seen the clock. We're going so long today. So I tell you what I'm going to do. John, you're going to be happy about this. I'm going to skip over the news blast this week, ladies and gents. Oof. If you have complaints about that, get in touch. Leave them in the comments.
I'll take the win.
Have a go at me, because Gareth will be thrilled to see that you're big news blast fans. But I'm going to skip over the news blast, and we're going to head straight into unpopular opinion. Although, you know what? I'm looking at it now. I'm not sure this is an unpopular opinion particularly, but I'm going to frame it that way just so I can hear Cherie sing us in to this week's unpopular opinion.
Unpopular opinion, let your hate unfurl. Laptops, tablets, and apparently cars, we hate on them all. Unpopular opinions.
Apparently cars. Cars are getting smarter and smarter all the time. They are now electric. They definitely fall within our wheelhouse of tech. And John, you've been covering these for a little while now, and there's a lot going on in the car world. Run it down for us. Are EVs the future, and are we there?
Absolutely. You know, forget your 15-year-old gas-guzzling car with a stereo with physical buttons. Who needs that? Give me a 17-inch touchscreen display that can play fart noises at the press of a button on the steering wheel. That's what I'm here for. But aside from those Tesla gimmicks, there is a lot of exciting stuff happening in the world of electric vehicles, and they are the future. That is the way we're going. We are being forced down that path by legislation, by governments, by the environment. We need to protect it. So, you know, by sort of 2030, 2035, most new cars will be electric. And there is some good news coming. Mercedes, they've got their EQS launching towards the end of this year. It'll be, I think, maybe their third all-electric vehicle. And this one is interesting because it has a mammoth range, 700 kilometers, which I think is over 400 miles on a single charge, which puts it right at the top of electric car range, makes it far more viable as a long-distance traveler, reduces the range anxiety. And part of the reason Mercedes have got this incredible range from the EQS, because it's the most aerodynamic production car ever.
Incredible.
Ever. They absolutely owned the wind tunnel. So there's some serious aerodynamics going on there. But yeah, the range for me about the EQS is the most exciting part, because that is what is sort of limiting electric cars right now. Also, the EQS comes with an option of Mercedes's new hyperscreen, 49 inches of curved glass, door-to-door, three displays into it. It looks mammoth. I love it. Car sort of purists will absolutely hate it, but there we go. Next up, we had Kia. Okay, more of an affordable, middle-of-the-road brand, excuse the pun, but its new EV, the EV6, it only just went and beat not only a Ferrari, but also a Porsche, also a Mercedes AMG, and also a Lamborghini in a drag race. This car shifts 0 to 62 miles an hour, 0 to 100 kilometers in 3.5 seconds. It's got a decent amount of range on it too. And it has a triple display that's inspired by a black butterfly inside. So isn't that lovely? You've also got Lexus's new LFZ electrified concept. Lexus being a little bit slower than others to dip its toe into the electrified water, but the LFC concept gives us a sneak peek at what the future holds for Lexus. And finally, it's gonna adopt touchscreens. Lexus has been one of the few holdouts of the car world by refusing to put touchscreens and forcing me to use a laptop-like trackpad instead to navigate, which is just an absolute mess. Give me a touchscreen. I just want to tap the apps. So that's good to see. So I'm excited for Lexus's next actual production car. The LFC is just a concept. And also, what have I been driving recently? I've just given back the Polestar 2, which was a fun drive. The week before that, I had the Mustang Mach-E. If you ignore that Mustang badge, it's a really solid electric car. Is it a Mustang? No. Is it a good EV? Yes. Go check it out. Thoughts.
Fantastic stuff. What a breakdown. Really appreciate that, John. You know, I think it's interesting. We're in a really interesting space at the moment with EVs. You know, I keep thinking, surely we're not far off these really becoming mainstream. And then I get met with, you know, you guys over there in New York probably don't have driveways, I'm assuming, don't have ways that you would be able to charge these vehicles on public streets and stuff like that. So they just can't hit the mainstream in that way, right?
As as a New Yorker who, like, proudly does, well, I know how to drive. I just don't. I live in the city. Like, I move, like, I don't have to. That's what the subway is for. Like, the subway is literally built for my lifestyle, especially now that the world is opening back up. Like, now I'm going to go back to what I do best. Just spending a night at a bar, just getting slosh, yeah. getting on the subway, getting home safely, thinking nothing about it. Yes. Like no one gets injured, no drunk driving. It's, but the idea of EVs, I am excited about because we do need to do more things to work on improving our environmental standards and like. I love a good car, and I love a good V8 engine. So, I'm torn by this news. Like, yay environment, but oh, that feeling.
Mark, where do you fall on this? Are you all for the EV future, or are you a little bit reluctant luxury?
I'm all for it, but I do feel like the prices definitely need to come down. I think
for sure.
The automakers need to do a better job of just simply educating customers, because usually if it comes up around the family, it's like, yeah, but I don't want to run out of power while I'm on the highway. And I think that there is some legitimate concern to that, because if something has a 300 plus mile range, what happens if you're stuck in traffic for an hour and a half? You know, so like, I think whatever automakers need to do, I think a lot of it has to be more education. But what I do like is that what I'm hearing from some of the new vehicles that are coming out is that they're starting to borrow some of the coolest features from phones. So, for example, the Kia EV6, more details came out this week on that. It can charge from 10% to 80% in just 18 minutes. And I think that's really cool, because I think a lot of people just like are like, oh, well, that's nice, but I can't wait that long for it to charge when I can just fill up at the gas station in like 5 minutes. Right. So I feel like it's not just about the convenience of charging and also helping the environment. It's like, how long do you have to wait? And it's, so it's nice to see that there's some progress being made there.
It's infrastructure as well. The Kia can charge at a fast speed, but only on a charger that can support and deliver those fast speeds, which are few and far, but even fewer and far between than the chargers currently available. Obviously, you've got Tesla's fast chargers. There's a couple in the UK which are up to 350 kilowatts, but actually very few electric cars get anywhere near that in terms of what they support. So I can plug it into a 350 kilowatt charger. It won't charge at that speed because the car can't support it. So there is a lot of chicken and egg around charging speeds, charger availability, and number of electric cars.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, we're quite lucky in the UK that the UK is very small. So wherever you're driving around in the UK, you can pretty much do it on most electric cars at this point. You know, last year, I did a little road trip with my dad. We went, I can't remember how many miles it was now. I think 1,000 miles there and back, each way 1,000 miles, in a Tesla Model S. And yeah, you're absolutely right. It's the range anxiety is real. When you get down to like 50 miles on the clock, you're like, oh God, where's the nearest charging station? And then you get there and yeah, you have to wait like 45 minutes to get 80% battery, whatever it is. It's not the most convenient thing in the world, but those cars are incredible. And that's the thing that gets me on board is the innovation that we're seeing in that car space now. The new dashboard, the screens, the auto driving, all of that stuff, I am all for. And so the quicker that stuff comes, the better for me. And I can't wait. And then Cherie, you'll be able to just stumble into your Uber, which will be self-driving instead of using the subway, and you've got to go down in the dirty subway, and then you just
that self-driving thing, I have questions about it, like just on the ethics of like, okay, somebody walks into the street, who lives, who dies? We still need
Sherry, do not get me started on that. Like, what do you mean who lives, who dies? The whole point of autonomous cars is they're in tune with the city. They're in tune with every other vehicle on the road, and they can even, you know, potentially ping phones and stuff. So they're hyper aware, and they will have much quicker reactions than a human. If someone steps out in front of you, an autonomous vehicle will have a much better chance of stopping in time than a human driver. And if someone steps out and in front of the car, and there's not enough time to brake. Like, it's game over. It's not like, oh look, there's an old man over there, maybe I will swerve and kill that person instead. No. If you run out in front of a car, that's on you. That's not on the car. If you don't give the car enough time to stop, It doesn't matter if it's autonomous or human. The thing is, there'll be so many fewer opportunities for accidents if every single car is autonomous. But we are 100 years away from every car being autonomous, if that would ever happen. Like, so yeah, there's a lot of push and pull, but the whole which one would it choose to kill thing winds me up every time.
I'm glad I said that then. I would, but no, but like I would like to talk with you offline about that because I am curious about it.
I think it's a really interesting point, right? Like something Mark said earlier about messaging, right? They haven't been able to message this correctly, I don't think yet. This idea of range anxiety plays on a lot of people's minds, but 99% of people don't drive more than 100 miles in a day, and so the lowest brand EV car is going to be fine for you 99% of the time, right? And then we come to this discussion of who is it going to save, the pedestrian or the driver? It kind of comes back to a messaging thing, because even if the risk is so mitigated that it's basically a null point, if a certain brand of car comes out and says, we always value the driver's life over the pedestrian, people are going to gravitate towards that car, right? It's how do you market these things? How do you message that feature? I don't know. It's terrifying.
All I have to say is this is how you get Skynet.
Exactly. Exactly.
If people were that concerned about car safety, everyone would drive a Volvo, but everyone does not drive a Volvo. So it's obviously not as popular, maybe, when it actually comes to a purchasing decision as people like to maybe think it is.
I think that's 100% true. Yeah, it's something that a lot of people like to talk about, but nobody's looking up safety ratings. Not enough people potentially are looking up safety ratings of cars when making their purchasing decisions.
Isn't it the Escalade, the new Escalade, that you can put like a second grader in front of it, and from the driving seat you can't see them because it's so massive? Like, it's stuff like that. Like, that isn't safe.
As long as you can see the touchscreen, that's all that matters.
That's all that matters. I did think that about the Cybertruck as well, the Tesla Cybertruck, which just looks like a tank. And it's like, oh yeah, you're going to be fine. But if you crash into anybody, their car's going to turn to dust because this thing is a tank. Like, I don't know. We're living in the future. These things look like stuff that were in 80s sci-fi movies. We're finally getting there. And I'm all for it. I'm excited for it. I can't wait. But without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, that is the end of the Noise Cancelling Podcast. Thank you so much for joining me. Cherie, if the people want to find out more about you and what you do and find out more of your thoughts on killer cars, where can they find you?
They can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Miss Smith 11, M-I-S-S Smith 11. Actually, you can find me on Clubhouse with that handle now too. Clubhouse, a thing.
You've been doing some really cool stuff on Clubhouse, right?
Yes. Like, we're actually about to relaunch. Matt Swider and I, we are running a club on Clubhouse called Hotline Tech. So we do it twice a week. The first day we talk about the news of the week or the day, and then the second day we talk about industry stuff, as in how to get into the industry, how to pitch, how all those things that if you are an aspiring tech journalist or even a tech PR person, is really informative, and we're going to be having guests on, so we're really excited about it. For things that are not Clubhouse related, laptops, tablets, VR headphones, and all the like, then you go to Laptop Mag and read myself and my staff's amazing articles. And as always, laptop then, laptop now, laptop forever.
Our editor always loves dealing with that little shout out there at the end. Can't do wrong. John, where can the people find you if they want to find out more about you?
I'm on Twitter at JJ McCann. I'm on Instagram, John BM McCann, if you like car stuff. And you can find me on Tech Radar with the rest of the lovely team covering all things tech.
All things tech. And like we say, this week, a whole load of EV and electric car stuff. So if that interests you, head over to techradar.com, find all those incredible articles. And finally, Mark, thank you so much for joining us. Where can the people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at mspoonauer. So S-P-O-O-N-A-U-E-R. It's much easier to say than to spell. And you can also find me at tomsguide.com, where we cover all things tech, but also a lot more than that. Everything from appliances to mattresses, all the consumer products that you want to know what to buy, how to use them.
Fantastic stuff. And finally, I have been your host, Matt Phillips. You can find me at MattPVideo on Twitter and Instagram and all the other social stuff like that. But what I want you to do, ladies and gentlemen, is head over to @GarethBeavis. Actually, no, @SuperBeav on Twitter and tweet him and tell him how much you enjoyed this week's episode without him on it. That would make me very happy. Thank you very much. He will be back next week, I'm sure, with your regular scheduled programming. This has been the Noise Cancer Podcast. You can find us on Spotify, iTunes, YouTube, all the fun places. Please do subscribe. We love you so much, and we will see you next week. Bye-bye.
Thanks, all.
Thank you.
Bye.